Cześć! Słuchasz jadeitowego podcastu. Rozmów o ludziach, kulturze i sztuce Dalekiego Wschodu. Witam wszystkich bardzo serdecznie w 13 odcinku jadeitowego podcastu. And my today's guest is Ukrainian, so we will change the language to English, which is easier for us to communicate. And as I said, my guest, Julia Shmuliak, she was born in 1988 in the longest city of Ukraine called Kryvyi Rih. I'm not sure whether I pronounced it in a good way, but the funny fact is that one of my previous guests, she lives in Japan right now. She was also born in the same city as you, so it's good to see this kind of representation in my podcast as well. The bio you sent me says that even though you were born in the Russian-speaking part of Ukraine, your family was originally from the western part. So you always spoke Ukrainian at home, and you remember your grandfather wouldn't give you something before you say "Дякую." Or you can also correct me, which is thank you in Ukrainian instead of Russian spasibo. So we can see that although there are so many Ukrainians speaking Russian at home, there are still some people that try to push your national language, which is Ukraine, to be used at home. Your family raised you with the idea that you have to see the world, to see how it looks like, to explore some of the countries, some of the cultures, and you applied for international passport and you went to the US. So I don't want to tell how it happened that you moved to the Korea, because now we live in Korea and I want you to introduce it. So thank you once again for accepting my invitation. And yeah, my first question will be on your studies in Korea, because you did your master's in Korea, and I'm really curious how you came up with the idea of moving there, especially that you lived in the US previously. So how it happened?
Hello, everybody. I'm really honored to be invited to this podcast. Well, how it happened that I'm in Korea now? I studied Ukrainian language and literature in Kyiv National University. And then my mom, who raised me with the idea that I should get out and see the world, the big world and different cultures, she would be always saying, like, why are you studying Ukrainian? You are not good at writing. Maybe you're not going to become a good journalist or book writer. So you should study something else. And I was good with languages, so I decided learning Korean as a third language. And because I was already speaking English, I felt like it will be a waste of time just to go for English studies. So I was thinking maybe something more interesting. And I looked into Chinese characters and I was thinking, oh, I don't think I can do it. And Japan was rather closed country, so it's hard to get a scholarship and go there. And then I looked at the Korean characters, which are letters, and I was like, oh, this looks more or less easy. And I learned the alphabet in one day, and I decided, oh, this is very easy. I will go and study Korean and will be fluent very soon. Which didn't happen. It's a spoiler. I still struggle and I still have a private teacher. Yeah, so I started learning Korean as a third language. And then after 2 years studying in the Ukrainian department, I transferred to Korean department. So I was always a bit behind. And by the time I was graduating from Korean studies in Ukraine, I could write my bachelor only on literature because my Korean skills were lacking. And literature is something I could read in translation and write about it. Yeah, so I decided maybe it's time to actually go to Korea and prove that I can study Korean. And there was some contest that the Korean embassy announced about I think students had to write about the Ukrainian-Korean cooperation, economic development cooperation, and my essay won the prize. And they said, oh, we don't really have anything to give you. How about you come and apply for scholarship, but you will be applying as everybody else. So you will not be privileged. We just give you this opportunity. So I did. And I think they were given scholarship for two people only. And I was the third. So I didn't make it first. And then the second guy, I think he got the scholarship in Europe as well. And he called me and he was like, Julia, I'm ready to give up if you are ready to take the scholarship. So we are still friends. That's how I got the scholarship. And a part of the scholarship was studying 1 year of Korean, which I did, 5 levels. And then you can choose your master degree. So I chose international relations and my minor was trade. Yeah, that's how I got into Korea. And I think I was in Korea once in my third year of studies in Ukraine for 4 months. And I really didn't like it because I like more European style. And also okay. I was a very poor student. My scholarship was only $200. So I had to eat and leave on the $200. So my life was a bit miserable in Korea. I just studied, watched Korean dramas and cooked at home because I couldn't eat out. And I had a budget that I would make part-time job and I would go out once a week. This is all I could do. So I came home to Ukraine and my friends met me and my friends and my mom and my dad, and I cried because I was so happy to be home. It was in 2009. 2 years before I came back to Korea for good. But then I was thinking, how can I be such a closed-minded person? I should go back to Korea and make myself love this country. wishful thinking. I love Korea. This is like bitter, sweet feeling living here.
Right now, how long have you been living there? Like this, the longest
11 time. Years.
11 years, okay. And you still need a teacher.
I studied Korean for a year and then my master was all in English. And then I was not really motivated because my friends were mostly foreigners or Koreans who spoke English. And because we were international studies, there were some foreigners that couldn't speak Korean. That's why Koreans also spoke English. And then after graduating, I went for a 4 months project in LG Electronics, and we were a foreign team working with the Korean Development Department. We were creating a program like Siri. We would create questions and answers for Siri in Russian language. And every foreigner that wouldn't be able to speak any Korean was treated so much better than any foreigner who would speak Korean. They treated them like, oh, those are foreigners. Of course, they don't speak Korean. And us who tried so hard and spoke actually good Korean, they were like, oh, they're trying so hard to facilitate us. So I think I got a little trauma. And after that project, I came out and I decided, any jobs that I'm going to take in Korea, I'm going to speak English. And if they do ask me to speak Korean, they will feel like I am facilitating them and trying to fit their expectations in a good manner. They will be grateful. Yeah, that's what happened to me. And I worked for the same company for 7 years. They understand my Korean at the level it has always been, which is not bad. I'm very comfortable living in Korea. But recently I decided to change my career and I found out my business Korean is lacking.
Okay, and also so it's more about a professional language, not the like daily usage. Okay.
Oh yes. Yeah. I don't have any problems using daily language yet.
Okay, so let's get back to your master thesis because I found the topic somewhere on the internet. Your thesis was also related to the Russian-Ukrainian crisis. So how did your Korean professors react to the choice of the topic? Because it's sometimes difficult to write on our local relations with the Asian professors that even couldn't have this possibility to go or to see our countries. And it happens the same with us staying in Europe, for example, in writing about Asia. So were they familiar with the issue? For our listeners, of course, please know that Yulia defended her thesis in 2015. So since then, the Russian-Ukrainian conflict has escalated much more, we can see right now. But then, were they familiar with the topic you choose, or how the cooperation with the Korean professors looked like?
First of all, my professor was very smart and is very smart. He graduated from Yale University, and he's very broadly acknowledged of foreign politics. And also the Ukrainian Revolution of Dignity happened in 2014. And of course, he read about it, and annexation of Crimea was very big in news. So he knew that. Maybe he didn't know much of invasion to eastern Ukraine, like Donbass, but he knew the scale. Also, when I came up with this topic, he told me, like, Julia, it's not a PhD level thesis. Let's focus on theories that we could use. So I basically just used the popular international relations theory of Mearsheimer, of offensive realism. And my thesis was that Putin is trying to create a territorial conflict in Ukraine so Ukraine doesn't enter NATO. Because in NATO, the rules that the country cannot have any territorial conflicts. But I think if I was writing now, my views changed so much, and I was so stressed of writing that thesis. So I really wanted to get it done properly using the proper theories. But I don't believe that this war is because of NATO. NATO is just Putin is using this reason for invasion, but actually I'm sure he's just scared of this democratic nation coming up right near his borders. And what if Ukraine develops so much faster and better than Russia, and Russian people can clearly see it because they speak common language and they travel, some of Russians travel to Ukraine for work, like actors and singers. And he's just threatened, his authority is threatened. That's why he is waging this war. This is actually the war of evil and good.
Yeah, especially when he sees Russians going to Ukraine and feeling a bit of freedom. He has like a personal access to media, to the internet is totally different, and you just can cross the border and you see totally different world. Okay, and what about Koreans? How did they react to the war outbreak? Did they recognize you as a Ukrainian, or did they treat you as they did before? I'm asking this question because when I asked another guest who lives in Japan, the reactions were, at first they were a kind of taboo, like they knew that she is from Ukraine, but they didn't know how to ask her. They didn't know how to comfort her in the situation. So they treated her a bit protectional without asking on the case. But I do believe that it could be different in Korea.
Yes, Koreans are more emotional people than Japanese. And some people compare Korea to Japan because Japan also colonized Korea and influenced a lot culturally. But like Russia colonized Ukraine for so many years, but Ukrainians are still such a different nation from Russians. And this, do you know this Russian propaganda of Brazilian nation? I never felt any brotherly feeling to any Russian person. Of course, I know some Russians and I'm even friends with some Russians, but I always felt that we are so different. And I even felt more comfortable with foreigners, the way they think, the way they live, their values. So the same is happening with Japan and Korea, even though Japan colonized Korea and culturally influenced. Koreans are more open and more emotional, so they can easily come up to you. And many foreigners think it's bad that they don't have personal space. Koreans just come up to you. Oh, you're from Ukraine. I heard what's happening. My neighbor said that, oh, I was in a hospital for a long time. She's a little granny, so nice. She's like, I was constantly watching news, and I feel so sorry. We cannot help much. Somehow Koreans have this big pride, and they think that their country is so important in world politics. And I like that pride, actually. I always tell my friends that I wish Ukraine had this pride for, Ukrainians had this pride for our country, and that we would be taught at schools how Koreans are taught at schools to love their country. Like if you ask Koreans, they think Korean seaweed is the best, Korean rice is the best, Korean system is the best, you know, Korean medicine is the best. Yeah, so they're very open, everybody come up. I recently was in a store that I usually go, and he usually would ask me something that about Russia or about Soviet Union. And I usually try to explain him that Ukraine is not Soviet Union anymore, and it was a very pitiful history of us. And this time he was like, oh, now I understand why you don't like Soviet Union, because Russia is fighting with you now. It's like North and South Korea. And I'm like, no, this is not North and South Korea, because we are different nations. It's not in internal war. It's external war. It's like if Japan would start, you know, invading Korea again. Yeah, but I think it's hard for Koreans to understand that Soviet Union is not existent anymore. For them, all that part of the world, all southern countries, Belarus, Ukraine, is just like post-Soviet Union countries.
Actually, I heard such statements even about Poland in the past. Yeah, it changes, but there are still some people thinking that Poland is a part or maybe not a part of Soviet Union, but that we have a communism still in our country. So I understand, yeah, and it's sometimes difficult to explain the difference. You said that people do want to help Ukraine. So are there any special actions? Maybe you engaged in any events, in any donations? How does it look in a place you live in? Or maybe much more things, donations happen online?
So Korean nation is divided on people who really feel sorry for Ukraine and want to help, and people who don't want to ruin relationships with Russia, because Russia is a big part of their economy. The Korean products may not be sophisticated enough yet for Europe and America. Many are, but some, and Korean products like cosmetics, cars, and electronics become more popular abroad, but still not to the level. But for Russia and for close proximity, it's very popular. But those people who want to help, they usually come to the embassy and donate. We have also embassy account. Like I know some celebrities that donated like $100,000 for the Ukrainian donation. And as for me, I know my friend's brother, he is in the military, higher hierarchy military, and I contacted him and I asked him for ammunition for Ukrainian soldiers, like for helmets and bulletproof vests. And he organized on the government level the shipment to Ukraine. Some people who work in the companies, like medical companies, they also collect products and send them through Ukrainians they know or through embassy. Yeah, many people donated. Like sometimes I would go to some cafe and start speaking to some Korean person. Actually, I met in a cafe Korean girl. She's married to Polish guy, and they have a kid. She's living here now because of COVID, and he lives in in New York, and she was like, oh, I really want to donate. And I was collecting money for my friends then, and she sent money to my account to buy later ammunition for my friend. So yeah, usually it's through different channels. Some ask me how they can donate directly to Ukraine.
Good. So let's back to your journey in Korea, because I want to ask you, what are the positive aspects of living here? Because we started with discussing the war, which is for sure negative for you right now, is when you live a thousand kilometers away from home. But what is positive in this situation? How you can use this cosmopolitan view, those international view to such situation, and how it influences your perception, how you can rearrange it so that it's positive anyway?
Well, I'm not a refugee, so my life didn't change with war. It changed emotionally a lot, and I'm happy that my income is very stable, so I donate to Ukraine monthly. And I'm happy that being abroad, I can spread the information about Ukraine on a broader level, because sometimes I just see Ukrainian posting information and they just reposting each other's information. It's a little bubble. And then you go out there in the world and people live their small lives. They don't care that somewhere is a war. They feel they're so far and not connected in any way. So I can kind of bring the information as far as Korea and make people aware what's happening in the world.
Yeah, translate it to Korean, for example. Yeah.
Yes. We also go to protests we used to go every week, but now we go every 2 weeks because the Korean police is very tired of us coming out every week and they have to facilitate our demonstration. What's positive? Do you mean positive with their interconnection with war or not connecting?
It doesn't have to be connected. Like it can be much more personal and only about your own experience as well.
Well, I lived all these years here telling myself that Korea is very comfortable, because it's very comfortable. Like public transportation is so comfortable. Everything is so fast. What takes time in Europe, and everything takes time in Europe, it can be done in like one day or as quick as a couple hours. You know, everything is so digital. And I lived in this comfortable world. You know, you go, as Ukrainians, we used to say it's made for people, like everything is made for people. Like I've been recently to Ireland to see my mom, and I went to the post office to send some donation to Ukraine, and there's no box in the office, in the post office. Like you are coming there to send something, right? There should be a box you can buy, and there is no tape. But a good thing that there is next door store with the tape, but no boxes. But people are so nice. So I asked the guy, oh, do you happen to sell boxes? He's like, I'm not selling them, but I am saving boxes of the products. Maybe people can use it. So it's first, it's all so comfortable in Korea. But now I'm getting a bit tired of this, like, overwhelming comfort. Like, you almost don't have to think. And my friends are joking that maybe because you are Ukrainian, you need an obstacle. It's your physical need to have some obstacle to overcome. Yes. And so when I go to Europe, I feel more relaxed, like nothing is rushing me. And I feel instead of this comfort that is working properly of a system like post office and then doctors, a lot of doctor's office, you can just go there, you don't need an appointment. But now I'm a bit tired of this rush, like everything is made for you, so you have to accomplish something, achieve something, everything is working properly, you should also be working properly and fast and prompt. That I miss Europe, that is very relaxed and laid back. I think I'm ready to leave someday. And actually, last summer, I've been to Ukraine and I bought an apartment in Kyiv, hoping I can move back. And then the war started. So I don't know when I will be able to go back. But I hope I can go back with my experiences in Korea and improve Ukraine. So it's for people.
Yeah, I also wish you to be able to get back as soon as possible. And as the last question, I'd like to ask you, what would you say to the Ukrainians scattered worldwide, just like you in Korea, your mom in Ireland? It doesn't matter for me whether you are a refugee or no, but the sense of the nationality is really strong right now. So what would you say to your friends, to your relatives?
I think every Ukrainian now that is abroad should understand that this time can be also precious and useful, that any prospect and experience they get in any country they are now can be useful later in Ukraine. Or even if they don't come to Ukraine, then Ukrainian culture will spread to other countries. I believe in universal human being, and I believe in interaction of cultures, and it's great when we can share our experiences with other cultures and bring other cultures to our homeland.
I really appreciate your approach, and I'm really maybe not surprised, but I'm happy that there are people like trying to find like those positive aspects, that even if you will not get back, you can spread your culture worldwide, and then if you can get back, you can rebuild or create something totally new for Ukraine, for others. That's all for me right now. Thank you so much once again for accepting my invitation. I'm happy that we managed to meet with the time difference. Yeah, so thank you so much and keep in touch.
Thank you for inviting me.
To był jadejtowy podcast. Do usłyszenia wkrótce.